It's showtime, folks.
Some bad hat, Harry.
What was the weight of the car when you got it, Earl?
You know right from wrong. You just don't care.
Fenway!
Those sons of bitches.
I didn't know. I didn't know.
You're gonna need a bigger potion.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of The Complete Works, season 4, a deep dive into the career and films of actor Roy Scheider. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey across the Scheiderverse is my friend, co-host, and fellow Roy boy,
Mike DiCriscio.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm great. I forgot about that. And I think that is going to lift my spirits every single time we record. Even when we're 100 episodes in or however many episodes in, that'll still be funny to me.
We went through this arc last season too. I think with Psychopath, you were just like very tickled by that pun.
It's so good. But yeah, I'm good. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. I think this can be a short episode, Mike. Go out on a limb and say that. So last week we talked about Roy Scheider's debut film, the low-budget 1964 horror movie The Curse of the Living Corpse, which gave him a pretty sizable showcase as an actor. And I think a movie we both kind of enjoyed. We were both like, yeah, Living Corpse.
Who knew? Ed Wood of Connecticut, sort of, in the director. That's fun.
So over the next few years, Roy Scheider would find some success on TV, taking on roles in two ongoing soap operas, Love of Life and The Secret Storm. We are not going to be covering those on the podcast because I haven't even tried looking for those.
I can't imagine they exist. Yeah.
I can't imagine they're super easy to find. And even if they are, that's a lot of soap opera to get through. And he would continue acting on stage in that time too. There's also a TV movie, Lamp at Midnight, in 1966 about Galileo, which we can't find. We tried to look for it, right? I mean, Mike, you did your due diligence, right?
Yeah, we did. We did some searching, and I think it only was ever put out in on VHS in like the mid 80s once.
Yeah,
And therefore has no digital footprint that I could find. I did even try to go to eBay and just like search for it, and I don't think I could find even a copy on there. Of the VHS, just out of curiosity. I was like, let's just see if this exists anywhere. And I didn't see it. So it must not exist anymore.
Yeah. So if there are any Scheider heads out there, that any fellow Roy boys that have the VHS copy of Lamp at Midnight, can convert it into either a DVD or digital file and send it over to our way at minimal cost to us, we'll do it. We'll do a bonus episode about that movie.
Yeah. And I guess we're going to put that out. That offer out for any of the many TV movies that he was in the mid to late 60s and stuff.
Yeah, there's a few of them that I think we're going to have a little bit of difficulty finding, which, you know, this is the first time in doing The Complete Works that like we haven't been able to find something. Right, Mike?
Yeah, I was thinking about how odd that is. But also, this is the furthest back in, you know, film and TV history we've gone.
This is true. We've never gone back to the 60s before.
I guess those things just don't exist. Nobody thought to preserve them. How many of those... you hear those stories of just like, I don't know, burn the vault, you know, kind of situations where people didn't think that it mattered to preserve any of this stuff. So we can't find it.
Yeah. So if we do find ourselves able to watch Lamp at Midnight, we will do a bonus episode. We'll bring it back and we're going to look for those other TV movies that kind of happen around this time period as well. But, you know, could be spotty at best. We will see what happens.
Yes.
Today, however, we have to talk about the next film in the Scheider filmography, one that brings Mike and Mike into a subject that we famously know a lot about, which is sports.
Yes. On top of being sports or Roy boys, we're also sports boys.
Exactly. Yeah. So today's movie is based on a nonfiction book written by George Plimpton, the famed sports writer, about his time trying out for the Detroit Lions football team. Are you familiar with George Plimpton at all, Mike?
Not even a little bit.
Okay, so Plimpton wrote for Sports Illustrated, co-founded the Paris Review, and even as a non-sports guy, I was actually a little bit familiar with George Plimpton.
Wow, fascinating.
Yes. And I recognized the name, and I was like, oh yeah, George Plimpton, he's like a sports writer or something, and then I looked it up, and then sure enough, he was, but like I was like, why would I know that? Why is that something that's like in my head? And so I researched George Plimpton's Wikipedia page. I like kind of did a lot of scrolling. He had a filmography, and he played himself in a few various roles here and there. The reason I know who George Plimpton is because he guest starred as himself in a season 14 episode of The Simpsons.
Holy shit.
Where he is the moderator of a spelling bee that Lisa is participating in. And he tries to get her to take a dive so that the like cuter younger contestant can win for like publicity.
Yeah.
And he tries to offer her a hot plate. A George Plimpton hot plate. And that was a line that like me and my friend used to repeat over and over again when we were like 12 years old. We're like, ah, and a hot plate. It's perfect for soup.
If you take a dive, we'll guarantee you a scholarship to the Seven Sisters College of your choice.
Oh, free college?
And a hot plate.
Amazing.
So for that reason, George Plimpton has played an instrumental part in my life. This is not a movie that gives Roy Scheider as big a role as the Curse of the Living Corpse, right, Mike?
Not even a little bit. And we even talked about that, like how shocked we were during the episode for Curse of the Living Corpse. Like, wow, compare his first, Scheider's first role to Goldblum's first role, where he's, you know, granted, a very important role in Death Wish, but right. Very small. And we were like, wow, this could bode pretty well for this early episodes. And here we go. Episode two. We didn't make it one more episode.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe his role in Lamp at Midnight was really substantial.
That's true.
We'll never know. But Roy Scheider pops up for one scene in the beginning of this movie. He has a couple of lines and then he never shows up again. But since he is in it, we've got to talk about Paper Lion.
George Plimpton pitched to the All-Stars, boxed with the champ, and had the gall to think he could play professional football. The Paper Lion is about to get framed.
So Paper Lion features Roy Scheider in an uncredited role as Central Park Flag football player, which uncredited role. This movie starts with like 20 names of credits, like screens of people.
Yeah.
Like a long list of credits. Roy Scheider, not among them. I was looking too,
but there were so many. I was like, he's got to be in here and stop looking.
Just have to assume.
Yeah.
Supposedly he is an uncredited role as a Central Park Flag football player. But the main character of the movie is George Plimpton, who is played in this film by Alan Alda. This is actually also a really early role for Alan Alda, too. It's before MASH was on the air and it's his second feature film.
Wow.
Yeah, it's only a second movie. Plimpton's girlfriend, Kate, is played by Lauren Hutton in her feature debut. This is her first movie. She'd later be known for films like The Gambler and American Gigolo. And David Doyle, who was Bosley on TV's Charlie's Angels and also Grandpa Lou on Rugrats. He plays Oscar, Plimpton's editor.
Huh. That's fascinating. Yeah. It's like mostly unknowns.
Yeah. These are all people very early on in their career. I think this is pre-Charlie's Angels as well. And then from there, it's pretty much the entire 1967 Detroit Lions lineup playing themselves, including Alex Karras, who later played Mongo in Blazing Saddles.
I was looking at him like, why is this person so familiar? And that's wild. That's so funny that that's him.
Yes. Alex Karras, who was in Blazing Saddles. He was also on the TV show Webster. He had kind of a long acting career after his football career, which kind of makes sense when you watch this movie. He's like the football player that pops the most in this.
Absolutely. I was like very shocked at like how good. No, I had known that it was like the actual team playing on themselves. So I was like, wow, this guy actually, and he's in like a lot of scenes and stuff. Yeah. I was like, damn, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah, he's killing it. He's only a pawn in a game of life.
Oh, man.
Also, Vince Lombardi's in this movie. He pops up for a scene, and boxer Sugar Ray Robinson also appears as well. So I think this movie is actually really interesting as like a historical artifact of like 1967 sports, you know?
Yeah. I should have asked my parents if they knew this movie or like were familiar with it at all, just to get a you know, people on the street view of if anybody remembers this movie.
You were alive at this time. What was it like?
Yeah, exactly.
The movie was written by Lawrence Roman, who also wrote 1956's A Kiss Before Dying, and directed by Alex March, who mostly directed TV throughout the 60s and 70s. Paper Lion had its premiere in Detroit, naturally, on October 14th, 1968. And I was not able to find the top five again, or the top 10 of that weekend again. I was able to find the number one film at the box office that weekend.
Really?
Yes. Do you want to take a stab at what the number one film at the box office on October 14th, 1968 was, Mike?
Oh, man. I don't know. I can't, it's just every horror movie and I can't think of one.
Not a horror movie, a sci-fi movie.
A sci-fi movie? 68? I'm not going to know it.
Okay. Barbarella was number one.
What? Not in 1,000 years would I have ever gotten to Barbarella.
Which, have you ever seen Barbarella, Mike?
I have not, actually.
It rules. It's great. I watched it for the first time like 2 years ago at the Roxy, and it was a great screening. Really fun.
That's awesome. We used to be a society.
Exactly. They're making a new Barbarella these days, apparently, with Sydney Sweeney.
Of course they are. Yeah, sure. Why
makes
not?
Sense. Apparently Edgar Wright's directing it. So
what? Okay, that's cool.
Wild, weird. But yeah. So Barbarella was number one at the box office that weekend, but I can run down the highest grossing films of that year once again for 1968. The highest grossing films of that year were Funny Girl at number one with Barbara Streisand, followed by 2001, A Space Odyssey, The Odd Couple featuring one of our finalists, Walter Matthau, Bullets, Oliver, The Original Planet of the Apes, Rosemary's Baby, Franco Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet, Yours, Mine, and Ours, and The Lion in Winter.
Wild.
That's a strong.
That's crazy.
Top 10 right there, yeah, right?
Holy shit.
That's very, very good. Can you imagine, 2001 A Space Odyssey, the second highest grossing movie of the year.
Barbarella, number one for a weekend. Yeah. That's crazy.
Just like if 2001 came out today, it would play in some art house theaters and then it would quietly go away, probably.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
For it to be the number two movie of the year, that's wild. The IMDb plot synopsis for Paper Lion reads, sports writer George Plimpton poses as a rookie quarterback for the Detroit Lions for a Sports Illustrated article. So Mike D, going into Paper Lion, what were your expectations and what are your overall thoughts on this movie?
Going into it, I had never heard of this movie, was not familiar with anything about it, did minimal research on the wiki when I was looking for this movie.
Yeah.
It is on YouTube. So if anybody would like to watch it, go ahead. It's on YouTube for free.
Yes. In glorious 360p.
And it's not even, that's the title of the video. But when you actually click on the settings wheel to change this, it's in 240p. because I noticed when I full screened the video, I couldn't see anything. Like, couldn't make out who anybody was.
Yeah.
So if you have to watch it in the regular YouTube size box, you can't full screen it. I mean, you can, but it's pretty unwatchable.
Yeah.
So that's, right off the bat, I was like, oh, boy, I don't know about that. But overall, yeah, I mean, it's fine. I think Alan Alda is great. I think it is in parts really fun and very funny. And I think it is just too long, and it's not a long movie. I think it's an hour 45 or an hour 40 or something like that. And so it's not a very long sit, but for a long periods, it is just football camp and and not even exciting football. It is just football camp, which is fine. I get it feels like that is the point of the movie, having the actual team play themselves. It feels more of one of those movies, what if we advertise or the NFL or just showcase what goes on at football at training camp, and that's fun. That's fine. I think right at the beginning, it does start pretty strong, where it has this running gag where Plimpton, at the very beginning during the opening credits, it's him going about his daily life and then cutting to he's going to pitch to both the American League and National League sides of the MLB All-Star game.
Yeah.
He's going to go three rounds with Sugar Ray Robinson. He's doing these things and you only see it for 20 seconds, and it looks like, and he's getting strike three. He struck that guy out. Oh my God. He's like dancing around Sugar Ray. The first time you see the flashback, and then you meet more of his coworkers, and they're like, oh yeah, aren't you that guy that went to try to fight Sugar Ray? And then you see him get knocked out. You see he gets worse and worse in every flashback, time the movie flashes back. And that's very fun. So there's stuff like that. It is pretty comedic at its core, but ultimately I felt really bored, for the middle section, mostly once he gets into the training camp and it is just him trying to fake his way through being an NFL rookie, and some of that stuff is fun and Alex Karras, we talked about, is great, but just ultimately is pretty boring in the middle there for a long time until it gets to the game for the last 15 minutes of the movie, the actual preseason game, and then I was like, oh man, this is cool, but the stuff in the middle 45 minutes is pretty rough for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you, Mike. I think the first 15 minutes of this movie, I was all in. I was really in, before anything really happens, when it's just kind of setting it up. And I think part of that is just because, man, it's cool to see New York City in the 60s with a jazz score going around.
Baby, is this score jazzy?
It's great.
It's a very jazzy score that basically never stops once the movie starts. It just keeps going. But it was like really fun to watch that first 15 minutes and you kind of get a sense of who George Plimpton is. And yeah, I think, you know, seeing all that footage of like, oh, hey, this is Yankee Stadium in 1967. That's cool. That's neat.
That's fun.
You know, and you got all these people in Central Park, all this, like, I don't know. I as film as a historical document, I think is an underrated aspect of getting into movies, right? Like just like movies that were shot in New York in the 60s. Like, hey, you get a sense of what New York was like in the 60s. That's cool.
That's cool. Yeah. And you also get for those first 20 minutes or whatever, like sort of like a slice of life comedy about being in magazine publishing in New York in 1967. Yeah. Like, and that's neat. I don't know. That stuff was fun.
Yeah. And I really like, I think Alan Alda's great in this movie. I really liked Lauren Hutton as well as his girlfriend. And yeah, I think their dynamic is pretty fun. And, you know, she's also like a photographer for Sports Illustrated or whatever, like him kind of sneaking into the shower to avoid the phone and like all that kind of stuff. But then, yeah, the Central Park flag football game, like all that stuff is fun. And then, like, yeah, as soon as he gets into the football part of it, man, just the movie just kind of stops. It's fine. It's just, you're just watching people training for football for a really long time. And yeah, and it's occasionally broken up with, like, you know, him getting razzed by the guys or whatever. It does this weird thing where, like, you know, he's supposed to be undercover. Like, they're not supposed to know that he's George Plimpton, all that kind of stuff, right? Like, he's supposed to, like, not be discovered by the team for who he is.
Yeah.
The team figures it out pretty early on.
Like, immediately.
Immediately they figure, oh, you're George Plimpton. You're the guy who did all this stuff.
Who writes for Sports Illustrated and we're athletes? Yes, we're aware of who you are.
Like, we know who you are. And so that, to me, kind of, like, deflates the premise a little bit right there, I think. Like, it's just like, well, there's not really any tension. They know who this guy is. They give him a hard time, all that kind of stuff. Then you finally get to, like, that last scrimmage, which is, like, an unimportant game or whatever, and they finally let Alan Alda play, like, in a real game. That's kind of fun. And I like that I like that he's still bad at it. Like, I like that the movie ends with him being like, yeah, I was terrible. I was bad. Football's hard.
It's very funny that it, like, I mean, I guess just to jump to the end of the movie a little bit, but it sets up that final play. Like, this is the one. And for it to really just undercut that is actually very funny. But yeah. I think they even tell the coach, even tells Alex Karras, like, at the beginning of training camp, like, this guy's going to die if you don't protect him, basically, and, like, reveals who he is. So he's got immediately, like, four or five guys that know the story and are, like, with him and helping him get through camp. So, yeah, it really kind of sets up this mystery of, like, you know, him, them not knowing who he is and, like, a potential betrayal and revelation and, like, all that dramatic tension around what his story is and why he's there. And then just within 10 minutes gets rid of all of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird.
Yeah, it's a weird thing where, like, I don't know. I mean, sports movies existed at this time, but they weren't, like, super prevalent, I guess. You know, like, Pride of the Yankees was a movie in, like, the 40s and all that kind of stuff. But, like, it was, like, the 70s and 80s where, like, you know, sports movies really became, like, a bigger thing. And I don't know, football movies, I feel like there's not that many great football movies.
I think there's more baseball movies that are great than there are football movies, but there's certainly a lot of football movies.
Yeah, cinematic sports, baseball, number one. Like, that's the one.
It's like baseball, boxing, football, to me, you know. And we even actually just last week on Mike and Mike, or, well, last week we recorded on Mike and Mike Go to the Movies, where we were talking about Harold Lloyd and Buster Keaton both having college football freshman movies. Remember?
That's true,
so, like, since the beginning of cinema,
yes,
it's been a thing. But I don't know, it's so weird. But this does feel like a very modern version of this kind of movie.
It feels like a kind of thing that, like, oh yeah, like, it feels towards the end, it's like, oh, a prototypical version of Rudy. It almost feels like a parody of Rudy.
100%. That's exactly what I thought it was doing. But yeah.
But, like, that could, like, Rudy came out in the 90s. It can't be a parody of Rudy.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's something that it can't be. But just the way it's kind of setting it up, where, like, oh yeah, here's this guy. He sucks. Everyone hates him, but they're giving him his one last shot. And, you know, Rudy ends in, like, that kind of moment of triumph. Like, Rudy finally did it. He's being carried away by the team, and this movie ends with Alan Alda just being like, yeah, I got sacked and now I hurt myself.
I'm literally unconscious, which is hilarious. Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. There's that, like, tension. He kind of, like, makes that deal a little bit with the coach, like, before the preseason game, being like, if we're up two touchdowns, if we're up three touchdowns, what could it hurt? You know, if we're up 21 points and then they get ahead 3 points or three scores and you're like, oh my God, are they actually going to do it? Like, it's like just immediately like the tension, which is funny. And then, he gets in and it especially that last play where he like calls a passing play and you're like, oh shit. You can like hear the big swelling music is going to happen. You know, he's going to hit the pass. I just fucking runs into the uprights and knocks himself unconscious. So funny.
Yes, absolutely. Should we count Bottoms as a football movie? I'm looking at
you know, it's in there.
Football's in there and it does
certainly
end
is
in the
all
football
about the
field.
Game.
Yeah, it is all about the game. I don't know. I'm looking at like the big football movies. And for me, I mean, granted, some of these are like I generally like a lot of sports movies. Like I'm a sucker for that. Just like I don't really like watching sports all that much, but I like watching sports movies.
Yeah.
You know, and I like the kind of like way you kind of get swept in it. And I think it works for certain sports better than others. Yeah, I'm looking at football movies and I feel like my favorite one out of all of these is The Waterboy.
Incredible.
You know, I mean, there's Varsity Blues, there's Friday Night Lights, there's The Blind Side.
Remember the Titans,
Draft Day, which is a football drafting movie.
True.
The Waterboy, underrated as a football film. There's Jerry Maguire, but that's about the agent. It's not about the football.
Not another teen movie, technically about the football guy, the jock.
That's true.
I think it's just weird that this, like you said, does feel like a parody of modern day uplifting sports movies. But predates them all by 30 years. So.
Which is pretty fun. And I think Alan Alda is a good center for that. Like I appreciate Alan Alda a lot. He's a good actor.
And I was wondering when this fell in the MASH timeline. I was like, I assume this is before, and I could have Googled it, but I'd rather not because it's more fun to learn on the podcast.
It was pre-MASH. My favorite thing about this movie is I got to do a deep dive into Alan Alda's filmography here and just kind of like look at like his other stuff. I forgot he was in Bridge of Spies. You know,
he's in Bridge of Spies.
He's in Bridge of Spies.
That's crazy.
He's in The Aviator. He's in Marriage Story. My favorite Alan Alda thing is he was Jack's dad on 30 Rock.
Yes.
He has a few of my favorite lines in that show. But all right. So that is Paper Lion. We should talk about Roy Scheider in this movie as much as we can.
Yeah.
So Roy Scheider does pop up in Paper Lion for a very brief scene. So it's early on in the movie too. This is one of those classic situations where it's early on in an actor's career. You're watching that for that actor. They pop up for like 5 seconds in the first 10 minutes of the movie. And then you just got to watch the rest of the movie without expecting to see them. And that is the case with Roy Scheider here. What did you think of Roy Scheider in Paper Lion, Mike?
So much as you can analyze or you know, have a response to 3 or 4 lines. I think he's good. He's good. I don't know. He's pretty funny. I think that whole conceit of them playing flag or tag football or whatever in Central Park is so funny because they're all in like khakis and sweaters and button ups.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is happening? Like, what is going on?
This is back when, men wore suits and ties to work and they wore khakis to football. That was.
Yeah. Like, what is happening? So that's fun. But yeah, Scheider is good. He's one of the people in the game. And then he's one of the people I think that like sort of triggers one of those flashbacks like, oh, yeah, you're the guy you got in the ring with Robinson. And I think he's the one where you see him actually get knocked out. And then like home run after home run after home run in the All-Star game. You see like the bad endings of all the flashbacks, which is fun. Somebody tells him, the editor, I think, is like, oh, yeah, Plimpton's got like 6 articles left on his contract. So he's going to try and get on an NFL team. And Scheider's like, oh, you're going to die, buddy. Good luck or whatever. He's just got like a couple lines along something like that.
Yeah.
So it's neat that it's him, that it is Scheider, and you're like, you know, it's one of those lean forward because we're watching for her. You're like, oh shit, here he is. This is the moment. Yep. So that's it. Roy Scheider is uncredited flag football guy.
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing. And so, yeah, we were watching this on, you know, this 240p rip on YouTube. And I thought I made him out like in the football game. I knew that was the scene to look for him in. So I thought I made him out in the football game, but I wasn't quite sure. I thought I like saw him in the background or something. And then I was like, OK, I think I see him like passing a ball or whatever. And so I was very grateful that like he actually walked up and said a line so that I could be like, oh, yes, it's Roy Scheider.
Confirmed Roy Scheider.
Yes. And yeah, he's fine in that context. It's, you know, it's a couple of lines. He does an admirable job. And he does have that moment where he's like, you know, I bet a grand that, you know, you're not going to do it. Like, you're like that you're going to die or you're not going to be able to make your way through or whatever. And his editor's like betting the other way, like, oh, I bet a grand he'll do it or whatever. I think it's interesting they bring that up because they never bring it up again.
Never.
Like, that's the weird thing. It almost sets it up. It's like, oh, Roy Scheider might be like popping up later in the movie to collect and has $1,000. But no, he does not.
Yeah, there's even at the preseason game, there's only like two or three. It's only his girlfriend and his editor that are there.
Yeah.
It's like, wouldn't everybody be there? Like,
that's wouldn't so, people want to see what happened?
Yeah. So it is weird that they're not. Like, they don't bring that whole crew back. He's in one scene, and by God, he does it.
Yes, he does the thing. He got his paycheck for this movie, I assume. How do you think this fits into the Roy Scheider roles we've seen so far, Mike?
Well, it's really a downgrade when you think about it from Curse of the Living Corpse. But I think it is a weird microcosm of what his whole career that I think will be, where he's in these kind of like bigger performance wise, bigger, you know, kind of like cartoonish a little bit from Curse of the Living Corpse, where yeah. he's this, you know, almost a mustache twirling villain at the very end when he whips the mask off.
Yes.
And then kind of just like these like, you know, new Hollywood realism kind of type performances you get for a single second. But he's like, you know, being a normal guy, he's not like doing a character, you know, so yeah. to speak. So yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where that dichotomy goes, and as we get closer into the 70s and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there are more roles like this one, I don't think there's that many. You know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, Clute comes out 3 years after this, right. So it's like pretty soon, like, we're gonna have like pretty major Roy Scheider roles. This feels like a stepping stone into larger things.
Yeah.
So there's that. But yeah,
getting that Alan Alda bump, you know,
exactly. Yeah. It's really thanks to Alan Alda that we have Jaws. I'm gonna yes. go out on a limb and say that. any scenes or moments in this movie that stand out to you, Mike? Anything that you want to bring up in Paper Lion?
So there's really one sequence in particular where I was kind of like, holy shit, this rules. And it's right before the scrimmage game. So right, he or not the scrimmage game, the preseason game, because okay. they play the scrimmage game in the training camp, where he like throws a touchdown pass or whatever, and then he finds out that the like defense let him have that, like, basically, or whatever. They didn't sack him on purpose, and he's like all pissed off and mad. And then he is gonna be in the preseason game against the Cardinals, I think. And there's this whole like 10-minute sequence. It feels like 10 minutes. It might be 2 minutes or whatever, but is the score is just like peak jazz. Like, it's just fucking awesome. It's like something I would yeah. listen to without the movie at that point. Like, if I would just put on jazz music, and it would be incredible. But it's this really long montage of all the guys getting to the stadium, putting on their pads, going to the doctor, and they're taping up. And it's like a battle armor. Like, they're all getting taped and massaged and stretched and strapping on all their pads and stuff.
Yeah.
Putting their uniforms on, going out on the field and warming up and doing sprints and stretches. And it's this like really just long montage of that with this awesome jazz score. And I was kind of like, holy shit, it's been 45 minutes of nothing happening. And I'm back in it, baby. You know? And I was like, so hyped. And that was great. And then the sequence, and then it's just the game for like 10 minutes or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay, this isn't that exciting anymore. You know, it's kind of cool in like a Verite thing. Like, it's just the guys are mic'd or not mic'd, but you can hear everything. And they're like having to censor all of it. Like, they're just cutting out dialogue because they're all calling each other motherfuckers. Yeah. And like, you just hear they're cursing at each other and stuff and shit talking. So that's fun. But the section of the game for that was like coming down off that awesome montage into just like the game. I was like, all right, this is okay. And then Plimpton goes in for that final play or final minute or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, this is fun again. So even in the last 30 minutes, there's like ups and downs for me.
Okay.
But that really, that montage with the jazz and everything was just like so cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the jazz does a lot of heavy lifting in this movie.
Absolutely.
to get me through it. Cause yeah, it's a great score. It is like, you know, independently of the film, like, I could see myself, you know, getting some work done while just having this like score playing. Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. It's like a, oh man, who was a Special Delivery that had,
oh yeah. Yeah.
The Mission Impossible theme guy.
Lalo Schifrin.
Yes, had Lalo Schifrin score, and you're just like, what is this movie doing with Lalo Schifrin score? But yeah, this score for this for Paper Lion rocks.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I do want to give a shout out to, I was maybe dismissive of some of the football films from years past, like from before this movie. I mean, I haven't heard of most of these. I just looked up on Wikipedia, list of American football films. But Newt Rockne All-American did come out in 1940. Which is the Ronald Reagan football movie, the win just won for the Gipper.
Yep.
Which was a big, that's a huge movie like back then. And I feel like that probably cast a long shadow over the decades to come. I've never seen it. I'm more familiar with the Airplane parody of win just one for the zipper. But I feel like that's probably a big one too. And also, I mean, football in the 60s is like, it's so different than what it is today. That's the
thing. There's even a joke that I think doesn't land in modern day audiences with Vince Lombardi.
Yeah.
When he goes to him first to like, he's like shopping. There's like a montage of him shopping around teams.
Yeah.
And asking like, can I do your training camp thing? And Vince Lombardi's like, why don't you try the AFL? And pats him on the back. It's like, those are two separate leagues, I think, at this point. They're not the, joined as the NFL right now.
I mean, at this point, it's 1968. This is like, it's taking place in 1967. The Super Bowl just started.
Right.
Like 1966 was the first Super Bowl.
Yeah, wild.
Football is like really like in its infancy compared to like what it's going to become, you know, 50, 60 years later.
Right.
And so, yeah, again, as a historical document of that era and of, you know, just having so many of that era's athletes like all playing themselves in one movie. Pretty cool. Like it's a pretty neat thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There was the whole section too that I thought it stood out to me, even though I wasn't like into it. It's at the very beginning of the training camp when they have like all the rookies have to like stand up and sing their like college fighting songs or whatever at like in the dining hall or whatever that they're in. And I was like, this is interesting. Doesn't need to be a 10 minute scene. Yeah. Like, we don't need to see every person, but it makes sense if you're like in with the Lions and they want the rookies to like, you know, as like a showcase of the Lions kind of thing. I don't know if that was necessarily like what was going on, but it has that vibe to it, you know, where it's like, oh, this movie is an ad for the the Lions in a little bit,
yeah,
some sort of sense. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know, I think a lot of that training camp section has that feeling to me. We're like, oh, I'm not super into, like, I don't watch the NFL draft. I don't watch the preseason. Like, I don't care like who's doing any of this stuff in my regular life. So just watching 50 to 60 minutes of it in a movie is like, all right, okay.
Yeah, it's a little taxing. But yeah, that's Paper Lion. You know, it's an okay time, I think. There's certainly aspects to like, and I think as a historical record of the sports at the time, pretty cool. But yeah, it's not like the best.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfectly fine. Alan Alda is funny and great. The score rules. And yeah, it's sort of a... you know, like artifact of 1968 and what football and sports writing and I guess, you know, broadly pop culture and stuff was like back then. It's a cool little document.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think that's enough for us to wrap this episode up, right, Mike?
Yeah, like we said, Roy Scheider has one one scene with three lines in it. I think we could stop at 30 minutes.
I think so. This is kind of a footnote in the career of Roy Scheider. And so let's move on to Letterboxd reviews, Mike. I actually only collected one review.
Whoa.
And the reason is it's a very long review, but it is one that I think comes from an interesting perspective. This is a review by Jake Alda Coffey, the grandson of Alan Alda.
What?
Jake Alda Coffey, who I guess, I've did some research and I guess he's like on Instagram. He's like sort of a film student, maybe sort of pseudo influencer or whatever. But he's Alan Alda's grandson. He gave this movie 3 stars in Letterboxd.
Okay.
And he had a long review about it and really about Alan Alda's relationship to the movie. And so I'm going to read that instead of going through all the other Letterboxd reviews, because the rest of them were just whatever. There's not that many Letterboxd reviews for this movie.
I can't imagine there are. Yeah.
So here is a 3-star review from Jake Alda Coffey about Paper Lion. I am currently watching some of my grandfather's movies and giving my own insight and commentary on them. My grandfather hates football. he hates the violence of it all. So to my amazement, I'm shocked he would star in a football movie. I would ask him when I was younger why he'd be in a football movie if he hated football, and he'd tell me so I could have a job. This was before his MASH days, so he had to take whatever job he could get. But talking to him more, I discovered that his pure hatred for football was mostly from filming this movie.
Wild.
Not because he had a bad experience filming it, but because he would film with real players from the NFL, and he would constantly hear horror stories about their injuries they'd get, and I think it haunted him. Which still today, that's still an issue.
Yes. Yeah.
For such a small movie, I'm shocked with all the famous athletes they could get. Practically the entire Detroit Lions football team play themselves. On top of that, my grandpa fights Sugar Ray Robinson, played by the real Sugar Ray. And they even got the real Vince Lombardi to play himself, which is remarkable that my grandpa got to meet him. I don't think he realizes how big a deal it is that he met a legend like Vince Lombardi.
Incredible.
Yeah. For the small movie that this is, I think it had a big impact on my grandpa. Every so often, he'd tell me about stories from filming this movie, mostly because he knew I loved football. So he'd usually tell me horror stories about how one guy broke his leg in three places or how another guy had memory problems in his 30s. But if there was one thing he was proud of, he was proud that he was able to throw a football 50 yards. That's one thing he loved to brag about when speaking about Paper Lion. I've always tried convincing him that football is now different than it used to be when he filmed the movie. It's a safer sport now, and I'd even catch him watching a game or two as well. He started to get into football again within the past 5 years when my cousin began dating a college football player who now plays in the NFL for the Miami Dolphins. But my grandpa still groaned whenever a player would flip over or get tackled. Paper Lion, I think, is a cool idea. The execution feels very dated, though. It could potentially be a better movie if remade today. However, I think what makes it so cool are all the old school cameos by the athletes, which wouldn't have the same impact if it was remade today. It's well written, but I just didn't really enjoy the directing and the style of it. But I do think it's pretty dope that my grandpa was in a sports movie with a bunch of legends.
You know, on a certain level, that's all the movie needs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. If my grandpa was in a sports movie with a bunch of legends, I would also be pretty happy about that.
That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, congrats to Jake Alda Coffey for being Alan Alda's grandson.
Congrats for being his grandson.
Exactly. All right, Mike D, any other final thoughts about Paper Lion before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. That's, you know, bottom line, it's fine. It has some brief moments that are very cool and fun. So, yeah, it's on YouTube. So if you just want to check out a early Alan Alda sports movie, go ahead.
There you go. It's there. It's available. All right. Mike D, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MDPhilBlog on Twitter and Letterboxd and Blue Sky. If you would like to donate to support the show, you could do that on our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/MikeAndMikePods. And if you want merch, we have merch available on our Redbubble, which is mikeandmikepods.redbubble.com.
That's right. And you can find me online at msmithfilmblog on Twitter, Mike Smith Film on Letterboxd, Radio Mike Sandwich on Instagram, and also msmithfilmblog on Blue Sky. Thanks so much for listening to Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's my DeCrecio. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And if you want to contact us, you can tweet at us at Complete Works Pod. That's WRKS, no O in the word works. And you can find the rest of our podcast in Rapture Press alongside many other podcasts, all kinds of comic books and movie news and all that good stuff. Our theme song was created by Kyle Cullen, who you can reach for your own podcast themes at kylespodcastthemes@gmail.com. And our logo was designed by Mac V or at Fearless Guard on Twitter. Next week, we're going to be talking about 1969's Stiletto, about a rich playboy who has a secret life as a hitman for the mafia. Looks pretty cool.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, seems like a rad time. I'm hoping for like a special delivery-esque discovery out of this one. You know, they can't all be special delivery, but you never know.
You never know.
And remember to check out our other podcast, Mike and Mike Go to the Movies, for all kinds of other movie-related stuff, including recent releases, ranked lists, general discussions, and a lot more. So thanks so much for listening, guys. And remember to always roid between the lines. I didn't come up with a new one. We still got to figure it out.
We still got time.